Tonight I'd like to speak about a mitzvah from this coming week's Segra, Parshas Bo. The mitzvah is all the way in the end of the Segra, and a mitzvah that I'm sure you haven't heard about before. And that's the mitzvah of redeeming a firstborn donkey. Okay. You've heard of Pidyon HaBen. Some of them are similar, but in any case, this is a little different. If there's time, then we'll speak about Pidyon HaBen, and Pidyon Behema Tahora, not Pidyon, but the Kedushas Bechor Behema Tahora, the Kedusha that a firstborn animal has that's kosher animal, firstborn, if there's time. But if not, we'll start with this and see how far we get. Let's start first with some of the halachic information, what this mitzvah includes, and then we'll speak about the more philosophic ideas behind the mitzvah. A donkey that gave birth to a firstborn male that was born normally through the womb, so is you have to redeem it, or if you don't redeem it, we'll see in 1 second how you redeem it. If you don't redeem it, then you have to behead it with a hatchet from the back of the neck, cut off its head from the back of the neck. Okay. This mitzvah applies in all places, meaning even outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's not a mitzvah that depends on Eretz Yisrael, and it applies to all times, even today, even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. And this mitzvah has been fulfilled today, not today, but in our times, many times by people who wanted to have a mitzvah that's not usually done. Okay, there's also an opinion that says that just like by a firstborn from a kosher animal, even though the animal is holy automatically, as soon as it's born, it is holy, but there's a mitzvah to sanctify it and say that you are sanctifying it with the holiness of the firstborn, and some say that applies here also to this donkey. A donkey that's owned by a deaf mute, or a person who is a shote, legally not capable of making decisions and not responsible for his actions, or a minor, is also, somebody has to redeem that, but they obviously are exempt from the mitzvah, but the donkey needs to be redeemed. A donkey that belongs to a goy, or even if the goy has a portion, he's a partner in the donkey, even in a small amount, or in any specific part of the donkey, that if that part would be taken off, the donkey would be a balmum, it would be a donkey with a blemish, considered a blemished donkey, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. Okay. And that's why in most cases, I don't know too many Jews who own donkeys altogether, they own other animals, that's possible to have the idea of a firstborn. But if you own a donkey and you don't want to give up the firstborn that it produces, so you go into partnership with a goy, you sell a portion of the donkey, a small portion of the donkey to the goy for a symbolic amount, and then any children that are born, the firstborn, doesn't have these laws applied to it. A donkey that has no owners, tefker, right? Some say that whoever... makes claim to that donkey has to redeem the firstborn, and some say that a donkey, an ownerless donkey, these halachas don't apply to. Even a treifa, a donkey that's born that's not really going to live, also has to be redeemed. A donkey that belongs to a kohen or a levi, or a bas kohen or bas levi, just like by Pidyon HaBen, they are exempt from Pidyon HaBen. They're also exempt from redeeming this donkey. Okay. If the husband of a woman who's a Kohenis or a Levia owns a donkey that belongs to him completely, and his wife has no share in it, then he is required to redeem it. How do you redeem this? So you have now a mazel tov, a new male donkey was born, firstborn, and you have to redeem it. So how do you redeem it? So there are a few different options. One is you can redeem it with a seh. A seh is the product of, it is either a goat, or a sheep, either old or young. An older sheep, I think, or older goat is called a tayish. And a, what's it called? A sheep is called a rochel. Any of those are, what's it called, are okay to use to redeem this donkey, even if the sheep or the goat isn't worth as much as the donkey is. It has nothing to do with value here. It has to do with one sheep for one donkey. The chiyuv, when does this begin? When do you have to redeem this animal? We know by a human being, it starts on the 31st day, after 30 days. But here, there's no time limit. As soon as the donkey is born, it has to be redeemed, and the faster the better. However, there is no punishment. Usually, if you have things that you have to give to tzedakah or bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash or other things, there's a deadline. And after that, you transgress the prohibition of Baal Ta'acher of delaying giving the things that you have to give. By this donkey, there's no Baal Ta'acher. Right? You should do it as soon as possible. But if you delay it, since we'll see there's another option of beheading the donkey and not redeeming it at all, so there's no idea of being transgressing a prohibition by delaying. Okay. Now, you give this sheep to a Kohen, right? Not to a Bas Kohen, and not to a wife of a Kohen, but the Kohen himself. And l'chatchila, you have to give it to a Kohen who's a Talmud Chacham. That's called a Kohen Chaver. If there is no Kohen who's a Talmud Chacham around, then give it to any Kohen. The Kohen, if he wants to, can give you back your sheep after he gets it. Okay? After the animal is redeemed, the donkey becomes totally secular. It can use it for anything. Has no laws on it. And the sheep also is secular. The Kohen can eat it regularly. However, since it was given to him as a gift of kahuna, it has to be eaten in a royal way. Okay? Now, if the person has no sheep with which to redeem this donkey, then he has another option. He can redeem it with anything, money or anything worth money, but now it has to be the value of the donkey. It has to equal the value. The donkey's worth, let's say, $100. Okay? So if you redeem it with a sheep, the sheep can be worth $10, and it's fine. But if you redeem it with money or anything else, then it has to be worth, whatever you're redeeming, it has to be worth $100. Okay. There's a question whether you can redeem it with a check or with land, okay, because by regular pidyon haben, those things don't work. It has to be silver or something that has an intrinsic value itself, not something that's an IOU. A check is just an IOU, right? Even bills are an IOU. They have no intrinsic value. They stand for value, but they don't have any intrinsic value. The Kohen can give that seh back or sell it to somebody else. They can use that same sheep again to redeem other firstborn donkeys. Okay, as soon as you separate the donkey and designate it to be in place of the, as soon as you separate the sheep and you designate it to be in place of the donkey is redeemed. You don't have to give it to the Kohen. Now, it belongs to the Kohen. The Kohen, it should eventually be delivered to him. But it's not giving it to the Kohen that redeems it. It's separating it and designating it. So the Kohen doesn't have to be there. You can take a sheep, separate it, designate it. This goes to the Kohen. And the donkey now is permissible to be used for anything, and the sheep should be delivered as soon as possible to the Kohen. And then you make a bracha, okay? Al pidyon peter chamor. Special bracha, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher kidishanu b'mitzvasav tzivanu, al pidyon peter chamor, to redeem a firstborn donkey. Somebody can redeem his neighbor's donkey. There's a question whether he can do it only with his consent, or even if he doesn't want to. There's a question is, who has this mitzvah to redeem the donkey? Everybody, or just the owner? If it's just the owner, then the owner has to make you an agent, if you want to do it for him. and he has to agree. If it's that anybody should redeem, whoever can redeem this donkey, then you don't have to get his permission, and you don't have to be his agent. Also, another difference, can you make a bracha? If I redeem somebody else's donkey, right, if I'm only a agent, I don't make a bracha. If it's my mitzvah, then I do make a bracha. Okay. Now, until this donkey is redeemed, you're not allowed to have any enjoyment from it. Okay? And if you sell it, the money is prohibited. Okay? Until you redeem it, it's prohibited to have any kind of pleasure, enjoyment, any use out of this donkey. What happens if the donkey died before you were able to redeem it? Then, what's it called? The donkey is prohibited. You can't have any benefit from its carcass. And you just have to bury it. Finished. Okay. If you gave the donkey to the Kohen, you said, you know what, I'm not interested in giving you a sheep. Here's the donkey. The Kohen can't use the donkey for anything until either he redeems it with a sheep or he beheads it. Okay, if you don't redeem it, then there's a mitzvah, according to some, to behead it, or that's your punishment, right? You didn't want to give the Kohen the money, so you're going to lose your money. You have to behead it and bury it. Okay. The mitzvah of redeeming it precedes, even according to those that say there's a mitzvah to behead it if you don't redeem it, but the mitzvah of redeeming it precedes the mitzvah of beheading it. It's better to redeem it than to behead it. Well, we'll see. You don't make any bracha on beheading it, because according to some, there's no mitzvah at all. It's just like a punishment. So you don't make a bracha on punishments. And according to others, what's it called? The reason that you don't make a bracha could be because since there's a better mitzvah to do here, this is only in place if you didn't do what you were supposed to do, so then there's a mitzvah to do this. They didn't make brachas on second-rate mitzvahs, on mitzvahs that weren't l'chatchila, mitzvahs that weren't the ideal, only a secondary thing. Okay. That's everything you wanted to know about redeeming your firstborn donkeys. But now we'll get to the more philosophical part. What does it all mean? And this is, I think, more relevant since most of us don't have donkeys. Rashi brings down two different opinions as to what this mitzvah symbolizes. What's the idea behind the mitzvah? Why does these donkeys have any kind of holiness that they have to be redeemed? So the first one he says is that this is another remembrance to the Exodus from Egypt, because the Egyptians are compared to donkeys. Right? The psukim refer to them as basar chamorim besarim. They are like the flesh of donkeys. Right? A donkey is a very materialistic, being, and a beast of burden. And the Egyptians were extremely materialistic people, so they were compared to donkeys. And therefore, the firstborn of the Egyptians that were killed is symbolized by the donkey that now has special meaning to us and has to be redeemed by a seh. And the seh, the sheep, is a symbol of the Jewish people, meaning we took the place of the Egyptians. Their firstborn died, our firstborn were spared. Okay. And I was thinking that we have two remembrances to the slaying of the firstborn. We have a remembrance of sanctifying our Jewish firstborn. That's in remembrance of the miracle that their lives were spared. And we have a mitzvah to sanctify the donkey's firstborn. That's a remembrance of the firstborn Egyptians who were killed. There were two parts of this miracle. The Egyptians were killed, the Jews were saved. So we have a mitzvah that reminds us of our children being saved. That's called Pidyon Aven. And we have the mitzvah of Pidyon Peter Hamor to remind us that God killed the Egyptian firstborn. I was thinking, what's the idea, right? The idea is that it's not, there was two reasons why God killed the Egyptian firstborn. One is a punishment to them, and also because they were evil. The Egyptians were evil, and that evil had to be eradicated. But there was another reason. It was to give us an incentive and an inspiration to take what they could have done in this world positive and they did negative, that we should fill that vacuum and we should get an extra incentive to do what's positive. God said, if you don't let my firstborn go, the Jewish people, I'm going to kill your firstborn. So by them being killed, it should have given us an extra added incentive and inspiration that we're God's firstborn. And we have to act like that. And we have to function in a more holy way than the rest of the world functions, because we're considered God's firstborn. So the killing of the Egyptian firstborn accomplished two things. Negatively, it got them out of the picture because they were wicked. And positively, it should have made an impression on us. So therefore, we remember the Egyptian firstborn being killed, and we redeem it. We redeem that donkey that represents the Egyptian firstborn that were killed with a sheep to show that we have to take the place of those Egyptian firstborn and be understanding that they were killed, so we should be saved. There's something special we should learn from that. Their death shouldn't just be a negative thing. It should have a positive influence on us. That's more or less the idea. Right? And therefore, if you don't redeem it, so then what you're doing is relegating their being killed to just destruction, not to anything positive. So you represent that by beheading the animal in a way that's destructive. Just take a hatchet and behead it. That's destructive. So what you're showing is, God, you killed the Egyptians, but you did it for my sake. That makes me responsible to learn from that, right? Human beings were killed that we should benefit. That should give us an incentive to want to use our lives in a much more exalted way. And therefore, what you're saying is, I'm redeeming these donkeys for me. I'm taking their place. I am doing what they should have done, right? I'm serving the Rabbanu Shlom, and they didn't serve him. They didn't represent his firstborn. I do represent his firstborn. But if you don't do that, then you're relegating the killing of the Egyptian firstborn to a total act of destruction, which was also okay. They should have been destroyed. They were evil. But that's what it is. It remains destructive and not constructive. So then you behead the donkey to show that if I don't redeem it, then their death remains only a destructive kind of thing, which was necessary. But it wasn't the same thing that if I redeem it with a sad, that I show that I learned something positive from it. That's one idea. The second idea is that the donkeys helped the Jewish people when they left Egypt. Okay? Normally, they carried things in wagons, like we see when Yosef and Paro sent wagons to transport the family and their belongings. That's how usually moving was done in Egypt. When they left Egypt, the Egyptians didn't give them wagons to take all their gold and silver with them. So they had donkeys. There wasn't a Jew who had less than 90 donkeys laden with gold and silver. This is what the Medrash says. So as a commemoration of the fact that the donkeys helped us when we left Egypt, the donkey got a certain amount of holiness because it became a tool for service of God, and it has to be redeemed. It has to be redeemed. Now we'll see a little bit more what that means. So what did the donkey do? It helped us take the riches from Egypt, the gold and the silver. So you have to understand first what the purpose of that gold and silver was. Right? Why did God want us to take riches out of Mitzrayim when we left? So there's a Gemara. The Gemara says that the Rabbanu Shlom told Moshe Rabbeinu, "Daver noa ba'oznei ha'am." Go and plead with the people. What should you plead with them? That before they leave Egypt, they should go around taking gold and silver, right? Asking for gold and silver from the Egyptians. Why? Shelo yomar also tzaddik, because Avram Avinu shouldn't say, right? You promised me, you foretold to me that my children would be enslaved and oppressed. Right? And that you fulfilled very nicely. You also promised me that we would leave with great riches, and that you didn't fulfill. So in order that Avram shouldn't have complaints against me, plead with the people that should go take the gold and the silver. So two questions. First of all, if God promised that they would go out with gold and silver, then what did it make a difference if Avraham Avinu was going to complain or not? God has to keep his word. Why did God make it dependent on, I don't want to hear complaints from Avraham Avinu, so you better make them take the gold and silver, right? And if Avraham Avinu didn't complain, God didn't have to keep his word. And secondly, what to plead with people to go take gold and silver? It would seem that that's a mitzvah that everybody would like to do. So some say with tongue-in-cheek, but maybe not so much with tongue-in-cheek, that once it's a mitzvah, even taking money people don't want to do. Right? And I can bring you a proof to that to a certain degree. I remember in Miami, we had a kosher butcher. And I was amazed. There were many non-Jews who used to buy by that kosher butcher shop. And one day asked, you know, the guy was obviously not Jewish. So I asked him, why are you buying here? So he said, because the meat is superior, cleaner, more hygienic, right, if it's kosher, and I like to buy in a kosher place. Then there were Jews who wouldn't walk into the kosher butcher shop because the meat was dirty and it was, what's it called, not good quality or whatever. So they went to the treifa butcher shop. Does that make any sense? Here's a goy who's buying a superior meat, and the Jew won't walk in there because it's inferior meat. So is it inferior or superior? The answer is it probably is superior. But once it's a mitzvah, people don't want to do it. What? It wasn't that much more expensive. That wasn't the question. It wasn't that much more expensive. In any case, so that's what they say tongue-in-cheek. But I have another idea, and that's the following. Why it was necessary to give them the gold and silver only because Avraham Avinu would have complaints. The Dubna Magid gives a very nice marshal, and we'll use his marshal to expand it a little bit and explain what that medrash means, and then we'll see the idea of the donkeys. The Dubna Magid says like this. He gives a marshal, as he usually does. Okay, the allegory goes like this. There was a child prodigy who was a world-class violinist at 5 years old. So he was hired by an orchestra to play violin. And at the end of the month, the head of the orchestra called this five-year-old in and gave him a check for his month's work. Very nice check. The kid went home crying to his parents. And he said, I worked for a month playing my violin. They gave me a piece of paper. Father looked at the piece of paper. He said, nice piece of paper. We'll put it away in an account for you. Calls up the orchestra leader and he says, look, my son is 5 years old. He has no idea what a check is, what money is. You know what he understands? Lollipops. Call him in again. Tell him he made a big mistake. Right? You have his wages and give him the biggest bag of lollipops you can find. Tell him that is his wages. I guarantee you he'll be happy. Right, and he'll think it was really worth it. I will put this money in the bank in his name, and when he gets old enough to understand, right, that this was really his wages, he'll be very pleasantly surprised. But at this point, he doesn't understand checks and money. He understands lollipops. Give him that. So too, says the Dubna Magid, the real reward that the Jewish people gained by being in Egypt and being and suffering for 210 years. Was being purified from all their base sins or whatever to be able to reach a level to receive the Torah. And the Torah was the great reward that God promised they would leave Egypt with. It wasn't gold and silver. It was the Torah. It was the ability to be God's nation. That was what 210 years in Egypt necessitated. You needed 210 years in Egyptian slavery to be able to reach that level. Okay. But the people were not on the level to understand that. And if God would have said, well, you were 210 years slaves, and here's your reward, piece of paper, the Torah, they would have said, what's going on? And Avraham Avinu would have had complaints. What are you giving my kids? Something they can't understand. You promised them riches, and you're giving them something they can't understand. So, you know, for God's sake, keep his word, all he had to do was give him the Torah. He didn't have to give him gold and silver. Because the father would have complaints. So the Rebbe Shem said, for the Avraham Avinu's sake, let's give him some lollipops, gold and silver now. They'll think that that was their reward. Later on, when they mature, they'll understand the Torah was their reward, not the gold and the silver. In any case, the idea being that when they actually, what's it called, left Mitzrayim, they left with a tremendous spiritual wealth that they gained from suffering for 210 years. It purified them, it atoned for them, it raised their neshamas. Okay, they still, on the outside, look like a motley crew. But inside, they were on the level where potentially now, all the great things that God wanted to do for them, their neshamas were capable of receiving. On the other hand, they also needed the physical gold, silver, right, to enable them to make use of those spiritual things. In this physical world, you can't enjoy spiritual things without physical things. You can't do a mitzvah if you don't have a body. The word chamor has the connection to the word chomer, material things. In fact, it also has the same numerical value, resh mem ches, is 248, the same number of the organs of the body. Meaning, the chamor represents the physical, material person. The 248 physical organs of the body. But without them, you can't do anything spiritual. Right? If you don't have an arm, you can't put on tefillin. If you don't have a mouth, you can't eat matzah. You need to have physical things to do mitzvahs, to have spiritual results. So you need that chamor, you need that chomer, you need the physical material world to aid you in doing spiritual things. So therefore, the 90 donkeys, the number 90, I think, represents 10 times 9. The number 10 is the number of holiness, of total unity. Take a lot of things and you unify them into one unit of tens. Up until 10, everything is separate, separate integers. 10 unites all of them into one unit and you build on that unit. 11 is 1 plus 10. 12 is 2 plus 10. In Hebrew, it's achadisrei, shteinisrei. The asara remains a unit. Unity is holiness. That's spiritual. When things are physical, they're separated. Physical things, there is no real unity because everything's an entity to itself. But the closest thing that brings you to holiness is the number 9. That's the number that brings you to holiness, the one right before 10. So 10 times 9 represents how those 9s reach holiness. You're reaching a 10 through 10 9s, right? 9 representing that which brings you to holiness. The 10 is where you've been brought by those material things to holiness. So 90 donkeys helped every Jew. Meaning this concept that the material, gold, silver, the donkeys that carried it, enabled them to be able to have the spiritual benefit that they really got by going out of Egypt. But you can't have a spiritual benefit if it doesn't come through material and physical things. So therefore, the donkey becomes holy. The physical, material side of man is holy if you understand that you have to, what's it called, you have to redeem it with something kosher, with something spiritual, which is represented by the sheep. So you take those physical things and you transform them into something pure, which is represented by the sheep. What if you don't? And you remain with the physical thing and you don't redeem it, it has no redeemable value, then behead it, then it's worthless, then it's destructive. When the materialism is for the sake of materialism and it never leads to holiness, then it's worthless, then behead it. If you can transform it, exchange it for something holy, take that donkey and transform it into a sheep, then that shows that the donkey also has holiness. That's the idea. The Korban Eliyahu says a further idea. He says that Eliezer and Yishmael, when Avraham went to the Akedah, so he took three people with him. Eliezer, Yishmael, and Yitzchak. Okay? His two boys who went along with him. Shnei Na'aravito, Chazal say were Eliezer and Yishmael. They, compared to Avraham and Yitzchak, were compared to donkeys. Shvulochem poem achamor. You stay here with the donkey. Am hadom melechamor. You are people who are similar to donkeys, or im hadom melechamor. You stay here with the donkey, and you're like the donkey. You're very materialistic compared to the spirituality that we have, Avraham and Yitzchak. Now, they didn't want Yitzchak to survive. They were hoping that Avram would come back without Yitzchak, and they would then occupy prominent places in his whole household, because as long as Yitzchak was there, they were pushed to the side. So deep down, they would be very happy if Yitzchak did not return, if he was really Shem. But Lamaisa, Yitzchak survived, and Yitzchak is compared to what? To a sheep who went on the altar. And it was in the merit of Yitzchak that we were saved from Egypt. It was Yitzchak's merit. And there's a hint to that. Because sometimes in the Nach, Yitzchak is spelled with a sin instead of a tzaddik. Yitzchak. Ushvuasol Yitzchak. Shin, in gematria, in numerical value, is 300. When Yitzchak is spelled the normal way, it's with a tzaddik. That's 90. So when you subtract 90 from 300, what do you get? 210, which is the amount of time that we were in Egypt, 210 years. Those 210 years came to an end in the merit of Yitzchak Avinu. And therefore, maybe also those 90, right, compared to the 300, maybe are symbolized by the 90 donkeys. But in any case, since Eliezer and Yishmael were compared to donkeys, okay, and Yitzchak was the seh, the sheep, that took their place, so this is a reenactment, and Yitzchak was the one who, his merit got us out of Egypt, so we reenact all of that by redeeming the donkey with a sheep, right, which represents this idea. Korban Eliyahu, I have no idea who that is. The Sefer Habatim says that why don't we just give the donkey to the Kohen? He says because Kohanim don't work. They're serving God in the temple, they don't work for a living, they don't need donkeys. Right? So they could use a seh, they could eat. They can't eat a donkey. So you only can use a donkey as a beast of burden. So there's no purpose to give a donkey to a Kohen. That's what he says. And the Korban Eliyahu says another idea. He says, Yaakov Avinu, who is compared to also to a sheep, went down to Egypt amongst all the donkeys. Okay? And he wasn't harmed by them, just the opposite. They respected him. And when he died, they gave him tremendous covet. Because these donkeys recognized the greatness of Yaakov Avinu, the sheep, the donkey got a certain amount of holiness, and we redeem it with a sheep, right? Because they recognize the greatness of that sheep called Yaakov Avinu, they get a certain specialness, and we redeem them with a sheep. Okay, those are some of the ideas of Pidyon Peter Chamor. Okay, any questions? Yes. Because Adarabba, we don't usually call people horses to show that they're really a chamor. Right? A chamor means a real lowly beast of burden. It's not too bright. Doesn't have too much seichel. No, even then. Right? It's a very... No, there's not too much seichel there, which represents spirituality too. It's just a machine that works. That's it. That's what a donkey does. Right? A horse has some kind of there's a smartness to a horse, right? Right. Even Mr. Ed was a smart horse. They didn't have the talking donkey. They had a talking horse, talking dog, cat. Donkeys are dumb, really dumb machines of work. They're more physical. Oh? No, that was just a nice bedavka, the opposite. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show that even a donkey I can make talk. Right? Not a chimpanzee. Even a donkey. Right? That was the nace. Right? If it had been something with more a dog, a talking dog wouldn't have been as big a nace as a talking donkey. I don't know who knows the donkeys well enough to know they're smarter than horses. That's probably something the donkeys have said. Yeah. Okay. The cruelty not is an act of cruelty to behead a donkey. Okay, the truth is, killing an animal, okay, with a swift hit to the back of the head with a tomahawk, with an axe, it probably doesn't cause the donkey any pain. It just kills it. Okay, it's very swift or whatever. So, tsar bali chayim, killing an animal, if you don't kill it in a painful way, is not called tsar bali chayim. The only thing it could be is balkashkas. It's wasting that animal. Right? But since it's a mitzvah, it's not called a waste, it's called fulfilling God's will. Just as much as it's not considered a waste to make an alligator pocketbook out of an alligator. Okay? Even though the alligator, for sure, would rather be an alligator than a pocketbook, right? From the alligator standpoint, it's a waste of an alligator. But from man's standpoint, it's not the waste because we use it for something. So using it for a pocketbook is considered a legitimate use. Using it for a mitzvah is even more of a legitimate use. And God determines, he created these donkeys. He determines what you can do with an animal, what you can't. So where it's unnecessary, it may be wasting the animal. Where it's unnecessary to hurt it, it's also to hurt an animal. Where hurting that animal is necessary because of a mitzvah, whatever, or because of the needs of man, and where wasting that animal is not considered a waste because there's a positive purpose, then neither of those prohibitions apply. And I said, most Jews today don't have donkeys that have firstborn. They don't have donkeys. Okay. But there are people, there was a movement recently, in the last few years, of people who wanted to fulfill mitzvahs that are rare, that, you know, haven't been fulfilled because people just don't have the conditions anymore to do those mitzvahs. One of them was this. So they went, they bought a donkey, bedafka, and mated it and hoped that it would be a boy, right? You know, they waited, I don't know how many months it takes for a gestation, but, you know, they're waiting, you know, really to see. Maybe they had ultrasounds to find out if it was a boy or a girl. And then they, you know, celebrated a Baruch Hashem, a boy was born, and now we have a chance to fulfill this mitzvah. They went and they bought a sheep, and they got a kohen, and they gave him the sheep, and they fulfilled this mitzvah. They did it with Chanuch Teller, in one of his books, has a whole story about one of these ceremonies that they did a few years ago. They put up big notices, come, please, join us for this mitzvah. It's a one-time-in-a-lifetime thing to see, you know, a mitzvah that usually is people don't have a chance to see or surely not be involved. Not only that, they sold shares. Now we're getting to the Jewish part. Because they didn't want just one person to be involved in this mitzvah. So anybody who wanted a share in the mitzvah bought a portion of the donkey, right? And they all became partners. So I don't know how many partners they had in this donkey, and all of the partners fulfilled the mitzvah at one moment. So it was a big, big deal. What? Yeah. Okay. Let them have, they have a field day on things that they have enough things like this without mitzvahs that they do, right? We at least do what we think it's a mitzvah, so it's a mitzvah. Yes. No, not shechting. Took a hatchet. Right, back of the neck. Right. Can you force him? Well, it says it's preferable. It's preferable. Well, you can force him to give up a sheep? Probably not. If he refuses, then it has to be beheaded. But he has the option of getting a sheep or giving the money. If he says, look, you know, I really never wanted this donkey altogether, right? I'm not just spending a penny more on it, right? And according to the ones who say it's a mitzvah to behead it, so he got at least a partial mitzvah, because it's not as great as a mitzvah. According to the ones who say it gets no mitzvah, it's a punishment. Right. You didn't want to give the Kohen your money, you're going to lose that money. So, okay, but he lost the donkey, he didn't have to spend anything else. Yeah. He didn't say anything. He said, Rechush Gadol, with great wealth. Now, that can be interpreted physical, can be interpreted spiritual. It doesn't say one way or the other. Okay. In fact, some say that there is a hint that it doesn't mean physical, because physical wealth is never referred to as gadol, but as rabba, much wealth, right? Right? It's a lot, right? Whatever. Gadol is a more qualitative thing, not quantitative. It should have said, if it meant physical things, right? Rechush rabba, right? Rav, rechush rav, right? Rav says that many times in the Torah when it talks about physical things. They had a lot of property. Here, it's really qualitative, right? Qualitative really doesn't apply to physical things. So there's a hint that it means spiritual. Okay. That finishes that. There's really no time to go into Pidyon HaBen, but I'll tell you something interesting that I said by my one and only grandchild, Binyan Aben. We have, my wife doesn't like to say numbers, and I can't even think about the numbers, but we have like Lee Einhara, right? I think 4/5 of our grandchildren are girls and only 1/5 are boys, something like that. Something like Rachel. Okay. So, and only one of the boys was born first. So we had one Pidyon Aben. So what I said at that Pidyon Aben was the following. The question is, we have time to, question is, the reason the Torah says openly why we redeem our firstborn males, because the Egyptians were killed and the Jews were saved, and to show our recognition and thanks that God killed them and didn't kill us, so we dedicate our firstborn to God and redeem them to the Kohen. Shows that, you know, that, what's it called, that the firstborn is something special. We recognize the fact that God saved the firstborn. If that's the case, it wasn't only the firstborn males of the Egyptians that were killed. It was even firstborn females. And not only was it firstborn females of the mother, it was even firstborn males and females of the father. All of them were killed. Not only the men, the women too, and not only the, what's it called, the firstborn of the mother, firstborn of the father. So if that's the case, why is the mitzvah Pidyon Aben only apply to the firstborn male of the mother, right? Why doesn't it apply to the firstborn males and females of both mother and father, if it counterparts to what, which ones were killed? And the truth is that by Svardim, right, where we fast, the firstborn fast, Erev Pesach, right, because we were saved and they were killed, by Svardim, the meaning is that women who were firstborn also fast, because the firstborn women of Egypt also were killed. So why by Pidyon Aben is it specifically male firstborn to the mother? So I saw somewhere, and I could never find it again, but there was a name, a quote of a name of one of the Balei Atosos, one of the early commentaries, okay, lived in the 1300s. He said like this, he said a rule, and we're going to use this rule to explain. He said that the rule, and first of all, how do I know that that even the firstborn of the fathers were killed, not just the mothers? Because Rashi says there was no house that didn't have somebody die. And some houses have many people die. But how many? Not everybody had a firstborn to the mother, right? Or whatever, right? So it's possible that the person didn't have a firstborn in the house, or there was a girl born first. And not only that, how could you have more than one? Okay, they could have a few wives. But Rashi says that the Egyptians were very promiscuous. So what happened was, the man assumed, okay, I'm going to lose one kid. I have 10 kids. I'm going to lose one, because Moshe's been pretty on the button in what he's predicted is going to happen. And he said at midnight, my firstborn, right, is going to die. I'm going to lose one kid. Comes home at midnight, and he finds all 10 of his kids dead. He looks at his wife. He says, what's going on? Moshe Rabbeinu said, only a firstborn. My wife said, I got a little admission to make. See, this was your firstborn. This is the firstborn to that guy. This is the firstborn to the guy down the street. This is the milkman's firstborn. This is the postman's firstborn, or whatever. So that was what the Egyptians were like, and therefore all 10 kids died. But you see from there that it was the firstborn to the fathers, not just the firstborn to the mother. So why? Why is the mitzvah only firstborn male of the mother? So this Rishon says the following. He says that, why do you need to redeem? When is redemption made necessary? When a miracle happens to someone and they don't deserve it, then the miracle was given on credit. Because if you deserve it, so you're getting paid for what you deserve. If you don't deserve it, you're getting an advance on what you should deserve. So if a miracle happens, miracles need to be paid for. Okay, they have to be compensated for. God doesn't do miracles unless there's some compensation. Somebody learns something. Something happens that compensates, because God doesn't like doing miracles. Because miracles are not the nature that God wanted to exist. He doesn't like to do things out of nature. So, therefore, there has to be compensation. So, uh, So if you deserve it, that's the compensation. If you don't deserve it, then you have to do something to compensate for it. You need to be redeemed. You have to make a redemption. That's compensation for the miracle. So you need two conditions. A miracle, it's not a miracle, then you don't need to compensate for anything. And it has to be undeserved. Okay, in any case, it has to be a miracle and it has to be undeserved. Then you need redemption. He says that's why the women, the firstborn women, didn't have to be redeemed. Because the men in Egypt didn't deserve to be saved. They were not very righteous, the men. But the women in Egypt were righteous people. And they, what's it called, did deserve to be saved. Therefore, even though a miracle happened, they deserved it. There's no redemption. That's what he says. So he explains why women don't need to be redeemed, because the women in Egypt were extra special. It was in their merit that we were redeemed from Egypt. The women remained 100% pure in Egypt. The men didn't. So the men didn't deserve to be saved. The women did. The women, there's no, opinion. Okay, now we still have to answer why Dafka, the firstborn of the mother and not the firstborn of the father. Now, there seems to be a contradiction in the Torah of who actually, did. Let me see what this particular one is. Who actually did Makas Bechoros? Okay? Who was the one who killed the Egyptian firstborn? So the Torah seems to say that God says the Kesi called the Chor. In fact, we say in the Haggadah, Ani velo Malach, Ani velo Sarah, Ani velo Ashaliach, I personally am going to kill the firstborn Egyptian. So God did it. Yet we find other psukim that say that God brought angels of destruction who killed the firstborn Egypt. Lo yitein Hashem es hamashchis lavo el batechem hashchis. If you put the blood on your doorpost, I won't let the destroying angels come in your house and kill your firstborn. Seems to imply that it was destroying angels that killed the firstborn, not God. I want to say that, and I found that Rabbi Kivager says the same thing, that there were two different killings of the firstborn. The firstborn of the fathers, only God could distinguish who's a firstborn, who's not a firstborn. There's no physical way of knowing if this child is the firstborn from this father or not. Right? Only God can know that, and it says in the Torah a few times. Ani Hashem, I am God, Rashi says, who distinguished between the firstborn of the father and who wasn't the firstborn of the father. And I'm the same God who can distinguish and know if people are up to tricks or what's in their heart or whatever. So you see that only God can distinguish if somebody's the firstborn from the father or not. There's no physical way of knowing that. On the other hand, the firstborn to a mother, you could physically find out if this woman ever had a child before. Give her an examination and see, did she have children before or not? So an angel could know if this woman, right, had a child before or not. If this is the firstborn, an angel could go back in time and examine this woman and see if she had children before this child or not. But a man's impossible to see. So God smote the Egyptian firstborn of the father, because only he could distinguish. But he left it up to the angels to destroy the firstborn of the mother. Now, when an angel destroys, there's a rule. Once God gives destruction at the hands of an angel, they don't distinguish between righteous, wicked, everybody gets destroyed. That doesn't mean that somebody who deserves to live, right, is going to be destroyed. That doesn't mean. But it means that somebody who under normal circumstances doesn't have any reason to die, but if he's put into a situation where he needs a miracle to live, he doesn't deserve the miracle either. Then he'll not, under normal circumstances, continue living. But where people are dying and he needs a miracle to live, he's going to die. So where the angels take care of the destruction, they don't discriminate between people who should die and people who shouldn't necessarily die but shouldn't necessarily live, and they kill everybody. That's the norm. If, and an angel doesn't kill somebody who should be killed, right, then that's a miracle. Okay, if God doesn't kill somebody who shouldn't be killed, that's no miracle, right? God, when God's taking care, he's very discriminating. But angels aren't discriminating. Now let's see. Who killed, first of all the women, the females, deserve to be saved. So there's no idea of redeeming altogether. Now let's go to the males. The male of the father, who killed the Egyptian counterpart? God. So even though they didn't deserve to be saved, they didn't deserve to die either. They didn't deserve any miracles, but they didn't deserve to die. They were Jewish children. What did they deserve to die? What did they do wrong? They weren't Egyptian children. So since God was the one who killed the Egyptian male firstborn of the father, right? Of course he didn't kill the Jewish firstborn of the father. He was the one who was killing. He's discriminating. No reason to kill them. No reason doctor to save them, but no reason to kill them. But he left up to the angels to kill the firstborn of the mother. Angels are not discriminating. In this situation, they were. That's a miracle. And for the males, that was a miracle that wasn't deserved. Therefore, they need to be redeemed. So it's only the males born of the mother that there was a miracle, and it was undeserved. Both conditions, you have redemption. All the other ones, either it wasn't a miracle, by the firstborn of the father, wasn't a miracle because God was just discriminating. No miracle that the Jews weren't killed. And by the women, in all cases, even if it was a miracle, it was deserved. So the only time that both conditions are met is by the firstborn of the mother and a male. And that's why that mitzvah only applies to the firstborn of the mother and a male.